Hello everybody, I am back here with John Lash for the third of our three talks on astrology and what it's not, destiny in the stars. In his third talk, John will introduce the idea that genius can be inherited but not from blood relations. John defines the endowment or genomic inheritance we each carry, and demonstrates how to read Starbase, his unique format of constellational astrology. So here is John.
Thank you, Joanna. So what I would like to do in this third and concluding talk is to first recapitulate a little the crucial difference between signs and constellations, and then go into the application of what I call Starbase. By that I mean the form of astrological interpretation that would use the actual star patterns rather than the starless signs. So far in the talk, and particularly in the last one, the second talk, I introduced a visualization for picturing what the signs are by contrast to the constellations. That was the visualization of the floating disk, which is like a DVD or a CD disk. Now actually, if you go back to that visualization, and if you put a small red marble at the center of the DVD where the hole is, that would be the sun. And then if you imagine a tiny blue bead moving around the edge of the DVD, that would be the Earth. So really what that disk represents is the orbital plane of the Earth. That is called the ecliptic or ecliptic plane. That's a very simple concept in astronomy. And if you can take that visualization on board, you will be able to have a clear and simple definition of what an astrological sign is. A sign is simply an even 30-degree division of the ecliptical plane of the Earth. It's as if you took that ecliptical plane, which is defined by the motion of the Earth around the sun, and you divided it like a pizza into 12 sections, you would have the 12 signs. And these sectors are defined without respect to any of the surrounding stars. So, the definition of a constellation, of one of the constellations of the zodiac, is that it is a visible star pattern that lies on the periphery of that disk. Of course, the stars that make up the constellations are located in far distant space, very far from the solar system. But nevertheless, as we view them, they appear to be more or less uniformly distributed, so that we see them in terms of dot-to-dot patterns. And the 13 primary patterns that we see, which lie along the edge of the Earth's plane, are called the zodiacal or ecliptic constellations. To the north and to the south of those are a number of other constellations, more than 70. Other constellations that are called extra-ecliptic and that are not involved in the astrological format. So those are the two basic definitions I want to offer you so far, and then two other definitions which I've introduced, horoscope and genotype. The horoscope, as I explained, is the pattern that arises by placing the sun, moon, and planets, by locating them in the 12 sectors of the signs. And many people who will listen to this talk have had their horoscope done. I want to emphasize again that I did horoscopes for many years. I've done thousands of them. And I've also studied the horoscopes of a great many famous people, such as writers, actors, artists, and famous historical people. And in doing so, I always used the tropical format, which is without stars. I'm not invalidating that format. It's a tool for analysis of personality, but it has its limits. The genotype This is the next to the last term I'm going to throw at you. There's one more after this. But the genotype would then be the configuration of sun, moon, and planets, not in the sign grid, but rather projected into the actual constellations. And one way to illustrate that would be to say, if you were born on a certain day of June, when the sun was in the 10th degree of the sign Gemini, you would also have the sun located in the eye of the constellation of the Bull. This is not a contradiction. It's not either or. It's not one thing or the other. It's both things. You both have the sun in the sign Gemini and in the constellation of the Bull. And those two pieces of information cannot be correlated. They cannot be made to correspond. They cannot be reduced one to the other because they present different kinds of information. The sun in Gemini presents information about your personality makeup and how you express yourself as a social being. The sun in the constellation of the Bull describes a potential that you carry relative to your involvement with the human species as a whole. It indicates an inner talent that you possess, an inner talent or a set of talents or a set of abilities that are described by the mythological and poetic image of the Bull. And that's the basic difference between signs and constellations. Some of you may know that there have been attempts over the years to overthrow the sun sign astrology by proposing another system based on these star patterns. I remember that during the 70s and early 80s, there were a couple of books that appeared with this intention. I want to say that my work with the star zodiac or stellar zodiac didn't go in that direction. I didn't try to replace sun sign astrology with a different model. For instance, I didn't talk to my clients and say to them, "Oh, by the way, you think you're a Gemini, but actually you're a Taurus, because when you were born, the sun was in the constellation of Taurus." I consider that to be an error. It really doesn't work for a couple of reasons. In the first place, many people have tested sun sign astrology, and the prototypes that are given by that system work very well. They're accurate and they're consistent. So to tell someone who thinks that they're a Gemini, "Oh no, you're wrong, you're actually a Taurus in the sidereal system," is to my mind completely misleading. One of the first breakthroughs that I had in trying to decode the star zodiac came when I realized that the positions of the planets in the star zodiac do not yield another set of personality types. Rather, it yields a transpersonal perspective on human behavior and on human potential. And that was an enormous breakthrough when I realized that. So I no longer, at that point, I did not try to interpret the stellar positions in terms of personality typecasting. I started to look for a different way to read what they might mean. So that, so far, about sums up how I progressed and how I struggled along for years, actually, with the attempt to read or decode the constellations. I think at this point I could introduce the fifth term. There is some new terminology involved when you get into this star zodiac. The fifth term that I use extensively in my book, Quest for the Zodiac, and that is the term endowment. Endowment is the word that I chose to describe what the positions of the planets in the star zodiac show us. They do not show your personality. They do not show your patterns of behavior, your psychological complexes. They do not show anything that can be read in the normal astrological chart. Rather, they show what I call your endowment. And it took me a long time to define in my own mind what I meant by this term endowment. But at the end of the day, I came back to the point that Joanna makes in the introduction to the talk, that there is a kind of inheritance that we all have that does not come from our blood relationships. Now, we all recognize what genetic inheritance is, because we have the eye color, the hair color of our parents or our grandparents, and we may also inherit certain traits and interests from our parents. And there's no question, if you look at the science of genetics, that such a thing as genetic bloodline inheritance does exist. On the other hand, when you look at the lives of certain artists and writers and painters, for instance, who have achieved extraordinary levels of expression, it raises a certain question. At least it raises a question for me. Take D.H. Lawrence, for example. D.H. Lawrence was a writer and a man of genius. Okay? That's, I think, something that we can see from the work that he produced. And if you were to ask if the talent of D.H. Lawrence, if his genius came from his genetic inheritance, you would have to say that it didn't, because there's nothing in his family, in his parental background, or in his grandparents, that in any way indicates that it would have produced the genius that he became. I thought about this a lot because I studied the charts of many famous people, painters like Matisse, writers like Virginia Woolf, and D.H. Lawrence, and many, many others. And gradually it dawned on me that we, in fact, don't know about the function of 95% of our DNA. We understand today that 5% or less of the DNA goes into our, what are they called, chromosomes. And therefore, 5% of the DNA is used for the process of genetic inheritance. I began to wonder if the other 95% or part of it might be involved in another kind of inheritance. And I decided to call that the genomic inheritance, because the genome is the term for the total 100% of human DNA, the human genome. So, what is a genomic inheritance then? Well, my conclusion, based on the work I did in the with biographical studies in the zodiac, is that each and every one of us inherits from humanity at large, from the species, a certain pool of talents and gifts, and that is our genomic inheritance. And that genomic inheritance is, I would guess, the source of genius. Why would this be so? Well, in the 60s, Abraham Maslow introduced the idea of a peak experience. He pointed out the fact that psychology with Jung and Freud was unfortunately based on a study of maladaptation, or of sick or neurotic or psychotic people. And Maslow thought that psychology would be a better science if it were based on the achievements of extraordinary people, peak experiences, as he called them. And it occurred to me that these peak experiences happen in our species because an individual is drawing upon something they have inherited from the previous learning experiences of the entire species. So D.H. Lawrence, in fact, was able to optimize potentials that existed in his genetic and psychic makeup due to the fact that many, many human beings before him had suffered and struggled to learn certain things, and that those things that were learned by the species are made available to each generation through this genomic inheritance. This is a pretty complex idea, I know, and it's something that takes some time getting used to. But to make a long story short, I concluded, after many years of work with the star zodiac, that the position of the planets and sun and moon when you were born indicates your genomic inheritance or your endowment as received from the previous experiences of the entire human species. It's a very specialized endowment. That is to say, in your individual makeup, there would be a dose which would consist of elements that were learned in past time. Things that were learned and brought to a high level of achievement. Artistic things, aesthetic skills, musical skills, language skills, the ability to understand nature, to empathize with nature, to see deeply into nature. For instance, if you looked at the genotype of someone like Gregory Bateson or his earlier counterpart, Goethe, the Greek, German naturalist and poet, you would find in their genotype, by the position of the planets in the constellations, the evidence that they had drew upon previous experiences, and that allowed them to bring forth their own genius. So each of us is in that same position, and my work with the star zodiac is a way of exploring how that genius evolves and how it is passed on from one generation to the next.
I love that. I think it's really, really, really beautiful. In fact, I feel that within myself. I feel genetic inheritance from my uncle Stan Ulam, who invented the H-bomb. I feel some genetic inheritance from my mother, who was a painter and an actress. But I also feel extraordinary genetic inheritance from certain Russian poets, from H.D., who was an American English poet. And when I go and see certain impressionist paintings, painters, I feel a genetic inheritance from these people. And so I find it wonderful to be able to document that.
Yes, I want to qualify something here very carefully. I am not discounting the possibility, which is very real and demonstrated, that certain individuals could genetically inherit a certain kind of genius from their ancestors. For instance, it's a well-known example that in the Bach family, there was a musical genius that was passed through the family bloodline. And the same is true, I would recall, for certain mathematical families. Children with great mathematical talent often occur in several generations of the same family. So I'm not by any account dismissing the possibility that there is a kind of genetic inheritance of genius. But what I'm saying is that there's a much larger picture here. There's a much larger picture. And in the case of individuals such as myself, it's very difficult to explain my interests and my obsessions in life, if you will. It's very difficult to explain the capacities that I've demonstrated in my life to learn certain subjects or to master certain subjects and practices on the basis of my genetic and family background. And I think that that is rather the general case. I think in the general case that applies to most of us, there is going to be the genomic inheritance which comes from humanity at large, whereas in some exceptional cases there will be an obvious genetic inheritance of certain skills and traits such as mathematical or musical ability. Joanna has expressed her feelings about a kind of sense, a kind of way that you can sense what your genomic endowment is and how you might share it with other people with whom you have no blood relationship at all. And this is an extremely important experience. It's an experience that I encourage and that I describe at some length in Quest for the Zodiac. In the context of that, I use the term biographic empathy. What I mean by biographic empathy is actually something quite simple. Suppose you go to an exhibition of the paintings of the Fauvists, as Joanna and I did once in London, a wonderful exhibition which included Kandinsky and other Fauvist painters of the early part of the 20th century, Matisse, Duran, and so forth. When you participate in an event like that, you naturally, if you are receptive to what's there, you naturally respond to the art. You may be very deeply moved by the art, and you like it or you don't like it. But let's say you like it. Let's say that you find that it enhances and inspires your perception to look at this art, to look at these paintings by Kandinsky. What I'm suggesting is that in any case where you feel a resonance or a sort of inspiration through the work of a musician, painter, or writer, you may look a little deeper into the life story of that person. And when you do that, for instance, read a biography of Kandinsky. You have to look very carefully to find a good biography, by the way, but there are good biographies. Or if you're interested in the Romantics, read a biography of Coleridge or of Byron or of Virginia Woolf coming into the modernist period or of H.D., Hilda Doolittle, who was the great friend of Ezra Pound. I've read 5 biographies of H.D. And in reading these biographies and learning about the lives of people who lived before you that you never knew because they're dead and gone, you make a very profound connection with the life of that person. You have biographic empathy with that person. And that can be an extremely profound influence in someone's life. It certainly has been in mine. When I was quite young, in my teens, I established biographic empathy with certain writers, such as Céline. And it's something, a French writer named Céline, and it's something that guided and directed me through my entire life. Later on, when I was putting together the kind of theoretical framework for Starbase, I returned to that experience of biographic empathy. And I realized that Starbase provides a means for verifying it. The way that you would verify it is, you would put your genotype on the table. It shows the pattern of the 13 constellations, the visual layout of the bull, the ram, the crab, the snake tamer, the scorpion. And it shows the planets positioned in those constellations. Suppose, for instance, that you have, as I do, Venus in the claws of the scorpion. Then you could set beside your genotype, the genotype of a writer or painter or musician or architect or athlete or explorer, whose life intrigues you, and you would be surprised to find the correspondences that exist. In other words, they may very well have planets in the same constellational positions as you have them. What does this mean? It has nothing to do with any kind of causality. It's more or less of the evidence of a universal language. It just shows that they were working with the same genomic species potentials that you are also working with. It's like the torch is handed on from one generation to another. When a great naturalist thinker like Goethe lives and experiences certain things, his experience does not die. Even if his experience were never recorded in any written form, it would not die. It would pass into the legacy of the species, and it would reappear again through the genomic recycling of human potentials. And so there's actually a way, and I've done this, and it's actually remarkable. For instance, I got very involved in the life story of a woman named Sabina Spielrein. She was a Russian woman born in November of 1885, and she figured very strongly in the life of C.G. Jung. She was his first mistress, and the story of her life is very fascinating, and I've spent about 10 years studying Sabina Spielrein. The day when I finally sat down and looked at Sabina Spielrein's genotype, I found that there were a number, three or four, point-by-point correspondences to my own. And that told me that it was not simply by accident that I resonated so deeply to the life of this woman, but it was because some of the things that she experienced and developed in her life were also inherited by me, and I have been experiencing and developing those same potentials. So there's a wonderful outgrowth of Starbase, which would be to develop a computer program that would enable people to compare genotypes and to track down or trace their biographical connections with men and women of high achievement. And that would be a most exciting project, which I could see growing out of this system. So that's about all I can say in the three talks that we've determined here. And, of course, there's a lot more to say about this, but I meant for these talks only to be of an introductory nature, and I hope they have been helpful in that respect in giving people some idea of what this new system is. In conclusion, I just want to say that I want to explain the reason why the book is entitled Quest for the Zodiac. I think that may be obvious to you now, at the end of these talks. Quest for the Zodiac implies that the Zodiac is something that we're looking for. It means search for the Zodiac. Normally, we think we know what the Zodiac is. My experience has told me that we haven't even begun to understand what the Zodiac is. And so my book is one step, is one approach. Hopefully, it's a breakthrough and a good approach to understanding the profound question of what is the Zodiac and what can it tell us about ourselves.
Well, I really love this notion of biographic empathy. I think there is a good reason why there are libraries and bookstores and information on the internet about the people who successfully preceded us. And, I mean, supposedly everyone who's alive is a genetic or survival success. But, some of us have used their minds to create beauty. And, I think it's extremely important to draw on the beauty that has been created before us in order to amplify it, to shape it, to sculpt it through our own existence. So that's what I so much appreciate about your idea.
Thank you, Joanna. To conclude, I'd just like to add to what you're saying the word wisdom. It is about beauty, but it is also about wisdom. Starbase and the star zodiac is all about understanding how the wisdom of our species, the genius peculiar to us, is reborn in each generation, and how when that genius reemerges in you, it does so because other people who lived before you have brought it to the point where you can receive it and carry it onward. And this is a beautiful, beautiful concept that I hope would spread through a deeper interest and deeper study of the very basic and introductory work I've done with the star zodiac. So we'll leave it there for now, and we'll see what can be said of this perhaps in the future.
I do want to say that we don't usually do this, but if anybody is super interested in these notions, you can always write me at joanna@metahistory.org. And you can find John's email on the MetaHistory website. So he likes to keep it a little mysterious like this. So see you later, agitators.